But again, you cannot shit on yourself into changing. You cannot shame yourself into long-lasting healing and behavior change. We first have to devillainize your anger, devillainize you in your eyes, and then we get to do something good with it. Welcome to Shift Talking, a podcast where we explore the art and science of behavior change. I'm your host, Davina Hain, a mental health coach and founder of A Steady Space. Join me as we discuss actionable tips, inspiring stories, and expert insights to help you create lasting change once and for all. Now, let's get to the Shift Talking. Hi, hi, and welcome back to Shift Talking. We are officially on episode 9. Last episode, we were able to go into the overall transformation and discuss really what that looks like and also set expectations around what that could and should and will look like for you. Today, we are going to go into my absolute favorite topic, which is anger. And within there is my absolute favorite subtopic, which is the devillainization of it. So today is going to be a little bit of like a two-parter, being part one today, which is the devillainization of the way that we conceptualize and view anger. And then the next episode is going to be that second part, which is going to be understanding really the neurochemistry of anger and how much of this emotion we just deeply do not understand when it comes to how it triggers in our brain and what we do with it. I am convinced that one of my life's missions is to devillainize anger and help us view it more accurately. Not just to shift our perspective on it, but to view it fully and wholly for what it is and remove a lot of the dramatic, stigmatized, just poor ways that we view it and the ways that we utilize it in our behavior and the way that we treat other people when we are upset. So we need to be able to understand it in order to fully devillainize it. What's going to come through here and likely in every episode is this recognition that we must accept multiple truths, that more than one thing can exist at the same time without any of them being wrong or lesser in value or whatever that might be. So what we do know is that sometimes anger whispers and other times it screams, but no matter what, it has a voice. And what we have to do is recognize what its voice is trying to tell us. If we quiet it for too long, it will come out screaming and raging. If we don't quiet it enough, it will begin whispering and it will whisper things to us often that likely aren't super accurate. It's basically shifting that lens, right, into more of the things that upset us, which then builds up more and more, and then we end up no matter what at some point. Likely either screaming externally at others or screaming internally toward ourselves or about others. But no matter what, our work is our work. And one of the biggest things that I hear within the social media world and within the anger management world is this idea that other people make us this way. That if other people were to just act differently, that I would not have gotten to the point that I got, and therefore it's this other person's fault for how upset I got. And while this is an easy thing to say and also a not so easy thing to do, we have to recognize that no matter what, at the end of the day, we are responsible for us, no matter what provocation other people give us. So we feel the result of what other people do, right? Like I can feel anger as a result of treatment from somebody else or witnessing something else. And what I do with that is entirely mine. If I experience the benefits of the good things that I do well, I also must experience and witness and acknowledge and own the ramifications of the things that I do not so well. And anger tends to fall within that latter category, right? This more passing the blame, passing the buck, pointing the finger about like who really was the biggest problem here, so that I don't have to sit with the reality that what I did with my anger was really poor and kind of gross and likely harmed people. So in order for us to really get a good grasp on the way that we express our anger and when we do that poorly and really trying to change that, we have to first be able to understand it and lead with curiosity about it. And in that process is where we will devillainize this. And we will start here today with just understanding what anger is. We'll go into some common misconceptions. We will recognize how it helps us and how it harms us. And then we'll go into kind of taking the steps to devillainize this for ourselves using the SHIFT framework. So for today, what I really want to start with is really just understanding anger. It is a natural emotion. It is a primal emotion. And it's one that all of us are wired to experience. And it has a very bad reputation, rightfully so in some contexts. But for the most part, society tells us that anger is something to be avoided or suppressed. And it's not the whole story for it, right? We don't just, you know, try to avoid feeling poorly about something because our anger is telling us that something is wrong. Anger is a very good thing. Anger is a supportive, protective emotion. And it is a primary emotion and also a secondary emotion. It is the only of the six primary emotions that we also consider a secondary emotion. And the reason for that is that it is typically, it is almost always, if not always, going to be as a result of something else. And while the argument could be, okay, well, I don't just wake up happy, but I wake up angry and grumpy some days. So like if anger is caused by something else, then happiness must be too. And so happiness must also be a secondary emotion. The reason why this one, why anger is considered a secondary emotion as well, and why there's so much emphasis on anger being secondary, is because it's the only one that puts us into fight or flight. It is the only one that triggers our innate survival instinct that then likely causes harm. So what we really want to be able to do is recognize that this is a primary emotion because it triggers in the same way and it is a very natural one, and also a secondary emotion because it is protecting us from one of the more primary, more vulnerable emotions. I want you to view your anger like armor. It is this tough exterior that is protecting a more vulnerable experience internally. And then what we do with that can be poor, and sometimes we cause harm. But no matter what, anger is a signal that something is wrong. It's either an injustice, a boundary being crossed, some level of unmet need. We can do it in reference of someone, right? Like if I'm watching something happen and I don't think that that's fair for them, for society, for anyone as a whole, right? Like there is so much more about anger almost always triggering some level of feeling small or helpless or at risk. Or there's just something there that doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel fair. And I need to do something about it. The problem is what we do with it. And I'm going to go over that in the next section around like some common misconceptions. But for the most part, anger is our sign. It's our shining knight. It really is this desperate attempt that we have to right a wrong that we are witnessing. And it doesn't always mean that its gauge is right. It doesn't mean that anger gets it right every time and that it's the best measure for it. What it does do is say, hey, flag's waving. Here's your signal. Something's not right. And now do something about it. So the do something about it is going to come very innately, very knee-jerk, very instinctively and reactively. And that is exactly where we end up in trouble. So anger isn't the problem. It's what we do with it that becomes the problem. And that's exactly what we get to go over here and work on incrementally over time while we do this work. So when we talk about anger being a secondary emotion, we also have to recognize what it's a secondary emotion to. And I'm going to give you a brief personal example here. This is my third time recording just this one episode. The first time I recorded it, I just didn't like it. I was brain foggy. I had a funky night of sleep, very disorienting dreams, and I was just tangential all over the place. It was a decent record. I didn't like it. The second one I did about an hour and a half ago and loved it. And it was a very good recording and I was very proud of myself. And then my computer that I've been having very slow burn issues with died, even though I had it plugged in the entire time and it was showing full battery. So it all of a sudden said low battery and died on me before I could save the recording. Turned it back on, can't recover it. I immediately feel anger, frustration, right? And outside of that, beyond that, like within that, beneath that, what am I feeling? I am upset. I'm disappointed. I'm fearful and worried that I'm not going to be able to replicate what I just did. I am feeling so very just, defeated by this process at times. And I'm fearful that it's going to mean that I shouldn't do this, or I'm going to get gassed out on this, that I'm going to burn out. And what does that mean? If I can't replicate it as well, then what does that mean about me, about my business, about this entire podcast and its success, all of these types of things? I also lost over an hour of my time, and I have had this devoted specifically to record this, and that's a bummer, and I'm disappointed. And then beyond that, there's this level of like anger at myself, because I know my laptop is on its way out. I have been shopping for a new one for months, very passively, very casually, and I knew these issues were presenting. And quite frankly, I have done nothing besides complaining about it to do about it. And so within there, and there's of course a multitude of other things that I'm experiencing, but for the most part, it's disappointment. It's frustration, but that doesn't really help me. It's feeling a bit helpless, feeling a bit hopeless, feeling defeated, just sad, fearful about what this means and what can I really do about this. This has been one of many hiccups that I have had in recording and producing and putting out this podcast and this content, and that's a bummer. And it's very easy to allow for those things to stack up upon themselves and get this case of the fuck it's that I used to be so much more guilty about, right? Like I used to experience these things, not know what to do with it, self-deprecate, externalize it, carry it with me, just be this little sad little rain cloud who just like took this and affected other people around me. And it's not good. And so basically why I'm sharing this is because one, you're not alone and these things happen. And I'm sure not in this exact same context for you, but I'd imagine that this could be kind of applied to other parts of your life where we might get this feeling of defeat after defeat after defeat and get a case of the fuck it's. But more than anything, I'm sharing this because I'm breaking down what's beneath it. I'm breaking down what is the hardship underneath it. What is my anger protecting me from feeling? And it's trying to protect me from feeling all of those really icky feelings. All of the things that make me question myself and what I'm doing and catastrophizing this entire experience versus there's a problem, mechanical problem here, and I have the power to fix it. It is a bummer, but no matter what, I have to recognize that that exists and I can re-record it. I can make these things better. I will research and add it to my list to find a new laptop and or figure out a way to recover this one, repair this one. But no matter what, other than an hour, nothing is lost. And I first recognize that that was a bummer, that I'm disappointed, all of these things. And then I go into what to do about it. And when I'm asking myself what to do about it, I have to go with what's going to make me feel better at the end of the day, which is getting this redone and going and completed. Checking off the box that I intended to check off when I started my day today. And that's exactly what I'm doing. But overall, the immediate anger that I felt, this spark that made me just want to like smash the laptop and tear the charger that wasn't charging out of the wall, it's not helpful. I'm instead going to acknowledge what that did for me internally and combat those internally. I'm going to take some deep breaths. I did a quick little 3-4 minute meditation, regrouped, reached out to my Dell advisor to see about getting a new one, and here I am, back. But more than anything, we recognize what was underneath it, right? It's my anger was secondary to a perceived injustice, to an unmet need, to fears about myself and what that might mean. So I said a brief example, but that was much more than brief. But hopefully my going into so much detail really helps kind of enrich this experience and kind of conceptualize this for you. Something so abstract can become a little bit more concrete so long as we really dig in deeper to figure out what is beneath it, what's really happening. One of the other things that anger gets to do, besides serving as a signal for us, is also going to be serving as a catalyst for positive change. And it can be either positive change or negative change, right? But for the most part, we want it to be positive. If I have an unmet need, we would want to help our anger. We want our anger to help us determine how to make that into a positive change. We want to be able to recognize that a boundary has been crossed. And rather than being so upset about others that it's been crossed, I can then see where I need to place more. I can take power in that. And that's exactly what anger serves. It's a signal and a call for action. Next, we'll go into common misconceptions about anger. And this is where we confuse anger and aggression. This is what I was alluding to earlier in today's episode, is this misconception between anger and aggression, the feeling and what we do with it, what we experience and what we do in order to remedy it. If you remember back to episode 2, where we went into the S, our self-awareness, and also episode 3 with healing, we talked a lot about separating ourselves from our behaviors, about recognizing that our behaviors are not indicative of who we are at our core, nor something that has to be villainized, that behaviors can be modified, that behaviors don't fundamentally make us who we are at our core, but our behaviors are how we express who we are at our core. And so that's exactly the kind of differentiation and the separation that we need to be taking when it comes to anger. We have to be able to recognize that anger is kind of like the core part and the aggression is what we do with it. And I'm not only talking about smashing things, breaking things, and being like externally aggressive. I'm also talking about internal aggression. The way that you view yourself, the way that you view others, the way that you might do what I used to do, which was not hitting things, but emotionally punishing people, myself first, and then others around me. Anger is what we feel. It's what we experience. Aggression is our body's attempt at regulating it, at rectifying it, at repairing this problem that we have. It is a problematic solution to an underlying problem. But because that solution is so problematic, it absorbs all of the energy. It takes all the spotlight. So first we recognize, and I know I'm saying this a lot, but really we have to be able to separate it. Aggression is the behavioral aftermath of our original first anger. The second misconception is that there isn't really any healthy form of the expression of anger, right? That we either put anger away or we release it. But a lot of the time we don't consider the fact that anger, once it's regulated, is still rooted in anger. I'm just not utilizing aggression in order to get there. My anger is a good thing. We have to figure out new constructive ways of expressing it so that we can actually use it to problem solve and get us closer to a better model of communication. The third misconception is cultural influences. And the cultural influence isn't the misconception. It's more so how it's built within these influences. Different cultures view anger differently. And that's okay. I am not advocating that you denounce your culture and whatever and take everything that I'm saying blindly. I don't want you to blindly accept or reject what it is that I'm sharing here. I'm encouraging that we recognize these cultural influences about how we view anger and challenge them. Not just say, this is how it always was, and this is how I was raised, and this is just how it is, and use that as reason to continue with it, but instead to say, okay, well, it makes sense where this was before, where this came from. I guess now I can see the benefit of expressing anger in this way. And so how can I kind of challenge those beliefs without getting into this identity crisis, but instead of, okay, well, that made sense for them, and that makes sense under these contexts. But for the vast majority of this, I can actually remove these things, right? There's a lot of cultural influence that has to do with anger being a primarily masculine emotion, expression, experience, right? Boys typically, when they're raised, they are taught that anger and happiness are really the only two things that you can show. Those are the manly characteristics. Anything other than that is weak, pussy, beta, whatever we want to call it, right? For girls growing up, we are taught that we can experience basically a wide range of emotions, even the distressing ones. But when we experience anger and express anger, we are a bitch. We are taking on a masculine role. We are just, it's not where we're meant to be. We don't belong within the anger family, and men only do. And when we're talking about culturally and realistically, evolutionarily, this makes sense, right? Like, men needed to feel anger and all of these things in order to go to war for us. And women needed to be able to not feel and express anger in order to be this nurturing guide for the children that we're raising. There is so much here that's built in who we are. And I'm going to get into that, into the neurochemistry part of like how we're wired. But more than anything, we just have to recognize that sometimes the influences that we have from family, from culture, from religion, from generations might be actively causing us more harm than good. The intention isn't that. The intention is likely to help us in some way. And the impact of that is villainizing a very natural emotion and not separating anger from aggression. So here's how we know anger helps us and harms us. And this is not a comprehensive list. It's really just an overview here for us. What we do know is that anger helps us advocate and prompt change. It helps us point out our defects and protect us. These are all really good, beautiful things. The harm in anger is that it disguises as other things. It disguises as disrespect, as frustration, as stress, as poor sleep, poor diet, heart and, you know, cardiovascular issues, brain fog and headaches, and these types of things that we don't realize how much suppressed anger really affects our physiology. And how so much of this is a psychosomatic experience where if I'm not expressing this very visceral, strong emotion that is my protective emotion that triggers my fight or flight, if I'm just kind of shoving it down, it has to go somewhere. And that energy is likely relocating somewhere in your body. So as we do more work in devillainizing our own anger and releasing some of it, you will likely notice an improvement in cardiovascular, in digestive health, and your brain fog, your sleep quality, your choice, your decision making throughout the day. And again, we'll go into this in the neurochemistry next, but it really is fascinating. The way that anger also harms us is that it's such a strong emotion. It really is so powerful, and we forget that it can have the power for good. But when we get angry and our knee-jerk reaction is to just lead with aggression, this strong emotion ends up becoming something so deeply, deeply devastating and damaging. The other thing is that anger can feel good. And while the aftermath likely doesn't, the actual expression of this energy can feel really good. It can make us feel super powerful. And we have to stop acting like it doesn't. In that moment when we have this level of advocacy and we are kind of expressing what it is that we're doing, whether it's yelling or breaking something or whatever, there's a physical energy that our body is desperate to release, and so we are letting it. There's also this energy that our body just doesn't really know what to do with it, and that's where we suppress it. We shove it down and we might internalize it and then suffer emotionally and interpersonally. So the other thing is that anger harms us by focusing on more of a negativity bias. Anger breeds anger and negativity, and that's where we become just these very grumpy, road ragey, frustrated at quote-unquote small things people. But it's not these small things. It's the lack of acknowledging so many of these things over time that they build up. Until then, yes, it does become that straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. Anger also alters our brain chemistry. It changes the way that we have these neural connections and what we do with it. Neurons that fire together wire together. And so when we have poor expressions of anger, those connections are being reinforced and it's telling us that we should repeat it. We're basically getting really good at doing the wrong thing. So what I really want us to recognize is that, yes, it can really help us when it's harnessed well. No matter what, anger's job, its whole attempt is to help us. What we do with it, all of the aggression and those types of things, those are the things that actively cause us harm. But if we can devillainize this process and use it as something really beautiful and motivating, we can then transfer it over into something that will help us more often than not. So now let's go into the steps to devillainize anger using the SHIFT framework. So again, as we are familiar, we start with the S, the self-awareness, the sense of self. And first, we acknowledge our anger. We acknowledge it exists. We stop villainizing it. We stop running away from it. We recognize that we run away and we shove these things down because they're distressing and they're uncomfortable and we don't like it. And that's okay. I get it. I do it too, still. I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't. I do. And my work, your work, our work is to acknowledge our anger first. Don't ignore it. Don't suppress it. Don't even feel like you have to do anything about it right away. We just recognize it as a valid emotion and this experience that I'm having. Once we just sit in it, we can then start to identify the source. Ask yourself what's behind it. Ask yourself, what does this mean? What does this experience mean? What is my anger trying to tell me? What message is it sending me? Is it fear, frustration, hurt? We have to be able to understand the root cause so then we can address the real issue. As an example here, let's think about the fact that sometimes when we express our upset to somebody else, they can sometimes like take it on as their own problem. And then it kind of feels like it defeats the purpose of us talking to them about it, right? There is this part about I call someone to vent about something that's happening or even to get advice about like, hey, this is what's happening and I don't know what to do about it. And it's almost like they pick it up and they run with it on their own. They get so upset about it that it kind of makes you regret talking to them about it because now your energy and focus has to go toward keeping them calm and kind of helping them regulate themselves. And it just doesn't feel like it's doing what it was supposed to do, which was to help you kind of get to this solution for yourself and kind of like remedy this problem that you're having. The hard part is there that when these types of things happen, I may not be being self-aware in myself to start, right? So when I'm calling this person to talk to them about it, what is my goal? I'm angry and my knee-jerk is to call this person and what am I looking to achieve here? Do I even know if I'm looking for a hype person to just like let me sit in it and validate it and, you know, ruminate in it? Am I looking for somebody who can assist me and guide me and coach me into regulating myself? Am I wanting someone to fix it for me? Do I even want solutions? Right? We have to kind of go through this for ourselves first so that we're not just externalizing our ability to cope with our anger. We have to be willing to kind of hold that in myself so that then when I call this person, I can tell them exactly what it is that I'm looking for. I can call and be like, hey, the most frustrating thing just happened to me. I'm fucking pissed, whatever this is, and I need your help calming down. Can you hold space with me for a second? I'm not really looking for a way to solve this. I would really just love for you to hear me out. Do you have the time? Or I really don't know what to do, and I need a solution quick. Right? We can kind of set them up for as much success as possible, but we can't do that unless we have this baseline level of self-awareness. Because if we don't and we call someone, we don't know what we're looking to get out of it and neither do they, and they either try to fix our problem, they minimize it, or they absorb it as their own, we have to realize that we didn't even know what we were calling for. I set both myself and this person up for failure by not knowing exactly what I needed yet. I hadn't sat in it. I hadn't acknowledged my anger long enough. I hadn't identified the source for myself yet. And we can villainize them for making this about them and taking all of the energy from this, you know, anger that I have and making it theirs and expressing that to them in the moment. And then it becomes this whole thing of, oh, okay, well, I was just calling for help. And okay, well, fine, then I just won't help you. And it becomes this whole thing and rifts start. The other thing that is more accurate is utilizing our external self-awareness, which is picking up on what this person is experiencing. They are trying to help me. Them absorbing my anger as their own, my problem as their own, is them acknowledging this mutual injustice, them wanting to be an advocate for me, them feeling so frustrated and powerless and concerned that they are trying to kind of protect me. They are really getting very upset because they also see this injustice. You can use that as validation for how you're feeling. You can view that as somebody who is really just trying to help protect me, who's armoring up alongside me. And what they're doing with that isn't matching what you're looking for. Their intention is not matching the impact. So instead of focusing so much on their behavior, you can first acknowledge what they're trying to do for us. It can sound as simple as like, hey, I totally get it. And thank you so much for getting as upset as I am. Like, this is so deeply validating and thank you. And I think I'm just getting myself more and more worked up. Can we shift and pivot into like more of a solution oriented thing? Like, I don't want to carry that anymore. And it's really not helping me. And so I'm either going to like calm myself down and I'll call you back. Or could we pivot together? And that's perfectly okay. But first, we have to have this internal self-awareness of what actually is happening, acknowledge it, identify it, and allow for it to exist. The external self-awareness of what do I do with it and what am I really looking to, you know, achieve from it? What could others' experiences of me be when I am angry? How am I affecting the world when I am upset? How is the world affecting me when I am upset or others are upset, right? Like, we can really take this whole objective view of what is this really and where does this, how does this help me? What can I do about it? How can I allow for my anger to catapult me forward into something that's just better? Our H is then, of course, going to be our healing from the bullshit. This is where we have to practice so much self-compassion. This is where we have to recognize that being kind to yourself when you feel anger rather than feeling guilt or shame is going to be the massive thing that helps us get to that point of innovation that comes next. I have to be willing to forgive myself for past errors. As we do this work and we're learning so much more about ourselves within our self-awareness, there's going to be this part of us that likely does some inventory and learns that I was more of the asshole before than I realized, more times likely. And or I just mismanaged these things so much more often than I recognized at the time. And that's the point. You didn't know then what you know now. So you're going to keep shitting on that previous version of yourself that just didn't know. It's pointless. And not only does it not help us, it actively harms us. So instead, we recognize that I did the best that I could with the knowledge, the information, the skills, and the self-awareness that I had at the time. And now I know different. I can't do anything about what happened before. I can't change any of it. But what I can do is try to work in prevention. I could maybe go back and take accountability with anyone around me that I need to. I can make repair as often as I try, right? Like I can do as much as I possibly can to right previous errors. And what's done is done. What happened, happened. And the best thing that you can do for yourself or anyone around you is to show yourself compassion without excusing your behavior. We're just explaining it. And that's exactly all that we can do. I recognize how I erred. Here's what I can do for myself and for the people around me in order to act in prevention so that I don't repeat this. And then that will give me the opportunity to get into my I, which is my innovation, and innovation in communication, innovation in self-regulation, innovation all around that really just helps me recognize that I have a choice in how I respond to anger. You can choose to react impulsively, or you can choose to channel that energy into something more productive. And in the beginning, again, we will go into this in next episode. In the beginning, your reactions are not a choice. They're not. They are happening so impulsively, so automatically, that it's going to be first starting with an awareness that it's happening and then acting in active prevention, right? But for now, we just have to recognize that we have a choice. And I am going to come up with new strategies in order to be able to do that. I innovate how I choose what to do with this. And I communicate more constructively. We can start communicating in a way that's more clear, more direct, more non-threatening. That gets me more of what I'm trying to get. If we typically respond to anger with external aggression, right? Hitting, throwing, smashing things, whatever this is, name calling, labeling, yet like this very loud, obvious, more overt aggression, then we start figuring out better ways to regulate. We implement new strategies for that. We innovate what we do with ourselves when we are angry, and we hone in on our communication. When we tend to respond to anger more passively, more internally, more shoving it down and punishing or passive aggression or silent treatment, or even holding things in so much until we just kind of volcano and explode out at people, then we work on communicating more often. We work on more strategies of how I can advocate for myself in a way that feels safer emotionally, right? But no matter what, we need the self-awareness to promote some of our healing, and we need that healing to give room for us to innovate. And once we start innovating, we develop fortitude. We keep trying. We keep forgiving ourselves. We keep being willing to error. You are likely experiencing a vast amount of anger and all sorts of different emotions all at once, right? And more often, you're likely experiencing a good amount of conflict or just more than you want to experience anyway. You're already experiencing the anger. So why don't we do those things with some new strategies? Why don't we do that with the healing that I have, with the self-awareness, with this belief in myself that I can change behaviorally, that I can make the way that I behave and express myself align more accurately with who I am at my core. And I can start to channel that energy into something productive. We just keep trying. We keep that set level of self-awareness. We trial and error. We see what works. We see what didn't. We heal. We forgive ourselves from what didn't work. We capitalize on what did and innovate that further. And then we just keep going and we build this fortitude that will allow for us to keep going and trying. And then ultimately we end up at this T, this transformation. It's not going from this person who feels everything viscerally and whatever, just does not manage anger well, to this person who's just going to like take deep breaths and everything is fine and we're going to be, no. It's really just losing your shit less often. And if you work with anyone who works in anger management or a therapist that specializes in it, whatever this is, and they have told you that the goal is to just not feel angry, I fundamentally disagree. And please run away. anyone who knows what they're doing knows that anger is a visceral, primary, instinctive emotion. It's not about not feeling anger, you guys. It is about knowing what to do with it once I feel it. Recognizing its call for action versus just acting on what our body says to do impulsively as a behavior in response to that anger. We have to be able to separate that. And if there's anything that you take from this entire episode today, it is that anger is good. Please harness it. Please keep it. It's why I have this entire program built out that's called Keep Anger. And guess what? It's technically an anger management program, but it's really not. It is an emotional intelligence program. It is an introspective healing program. It is everything that anger management is, just packaged as anger management. But a lot of the time we don't know what anger management is. And so we avoid it because it's stigmatized and it's judgy and, oh, I'm not an angry person. I am. I'm an angry person. I'm a happy person. I'm a surprised person. I'm a fearful person. I'm all of these things. We all are. It's just what we do with it. So please recognize that the transformation is about doing something less often. If when we get angry, we name call and we get loud, and we're really working on that, and we still keep arguing with the people around us and we're still getting loud, but we're not name calling, that is still a win. That is still a portion of our transformation. And we just keep it going. But again, you cannot shit on yourself into changing. You cannot shame yourself into long-lasting healing and behavior change. We first have to devillainize your anger, devillainize you in your eyes, and then we get to do something good with it. So please, 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 please recognize that there is so much our anger is trying to tell us, and we are just misunderstanding the message. That's it. Don't kill the messenger here, guys. Listen to what it's trying to tell us, and from there we can figure out what to do with it. So I'll give some examples now just to really kind of like drive these things home, right? About how anger is a secondary emotion and what we can do with it instead. Let's take something like road rage. Happens often, right? And road rage is rarely ever the problem. It's rarely ever the other people on the road that are a problem. So when it comes to that, say somebody cut you off in traffic and it pissed you off, okay? And you got pissed off. Is it really that somebody cut you off in traffic? Or is it something more deep, which is that they put your safety at risk? You're feeling likely minimized, that they're acting like their time is more important than yours is. Is it that no one wants to experience an accident and you immediately go through this idea of like, oh man, like that could have been really bad. I don't want to deal with insurance. I don't want to deal with this. I can't afford it. I don't have the time for it, whatever this might be. Is it this perceived injustice, this perceived inferiority that they're placing upon you, that they are more important than you? Is it that you're already running late because you left late? And so now you're leading with this level of urgency and this person just got in your way. Is it because it's easier to view other people as the problem? Right? Like there are so many different things that contribute to why we get upset by these things. But more than anything, there is that part that's like, see me. Don't act like you can just cut in front of me and that it doesn't matter. I'm here. I had my place in line. And a lot of the time it's because we feel small and we also feel helpless. And we're likely carrying some of that heat from previous anger over until this thing happens and it becomes this kind of poster child for all of this internal shit that I've been struggling with, that I haven't been addressing. I want you to also view anger like pots on a stove. They're equal size pots with equal amounts of water, and the burners are both cranked at the same heat. And I want you to consider whether the version of you that holds things in or explodes or whatever this is, I want you to picture whether your starting temperature each day is at all cold. It's likely quite warm already, right? And I want you to picture the other pot that could be next to you, where we add in cubes of ice throughout the day. It doesn't have to be ice cold or, you know, frozen solid, but it's significantly cooler than the one I'm in already. And when that heat is on, the one that I'm already in, this one that's even a degree warmer than the other, is going to boil so much faster. So my whole point in this is to allow the work that we're doing to be adding in an ice cube at a time, or even a splash of cold water, right? I'm trying to prevent us from being these people who boil over at quote unquote small things. Because while getting cut off in traffic can seem like a small thing, especially if there's people around you and they're seeing you react really big and they're just like, what the fuck is your problem, dude? Like, why is this such a big deal? That's exactly what this is. Because it's not just about getting cut off. It's not this small thing. This represented so many things about like me at my core, about me in general. And we just fail to recognize that. And we are so quick to villainize the other people. Let's take another example of your partner lying to you, right? No one likes to be lied to. And I get that. And that's gross. Is the problem actually just that they lied to you? Is the lie, the lie itself, is that what upsets you? Likely not. Your anger is likely in the fact that they are lying at all, because what does that mean? If they're lying to me, that means maybe they can't trust me, maybe I can't trust them, and what does that mean about our relationship? If they're lying to me, that also means that likely they betrayed me at some point. And so what does that mean? What is beyond that that I just don't know and can't understand? If they're lying to me, that must mean that they also don't really respect me. And if they don't respect me, then what does that mean? How do they view me? How can I view me? Am I about to feel like an absolute idiot for trusting somebody? I tend to recognize that I'm a very honest person, and I go out of my way to give my partner so much honesty because I value that quality. And why do they get what I don't? Right? Like, there's resentment there. There's envy there. There's how come I have a partner that's lying to me and they don't? And what does this mean? Does this mean that I can stay with them? Does this mean that like they just lie often? And if they lied about this one thing, oh my gosh, what else have they lied about? What else am I in the dark about? What else am I going to be humiliated about? Right? It's not just about the lie, you guys. We have to recognize how much more there is. And I haven't even touched on all of them by any means. When your child disobeys you, when your child fails an expectation, when your child talks back, whatever this might be, are you really upset that they're doing that? Or are you upset about the power differential between the two of you? Are you upset about the mess that you now have to clean up because you're already overwhelmed? Are you upset about the cost of something that they just ruined? Are you upset that your words somehow don't seem to matter? And are you feeling small and insignificant and overwhelmed and crippled by the weight of all of this responsibility? When somebody tells you that they're mad at you, when somebody tells you that you made a mistake, that you did something wrong to harm them, is it really that? Or is it because you've let yourself down and you've let them down and that feels really gross and that's humiliating and you're disappointed in yourself? Is it upsetting that other people voice complaints to you because you go out of your way to stay calm and shove shit down? And so then when they bring it up to you, it's like, the fuck? You could have just kept quiet like I do? What does this mean? Does it mean that I'm in this perpetual fuck up? That I'm just perpetually not going to be good enough? And so then I can't even hold space for their upset because I'm too upset with myself that I might actually minimize their upset? That might even reduce their upset because I just don't know how to tolerate it. Because I don't want to say sorry, and I view learning about wrongdoings and saying sorry as weak as fuck because that's how I was raised. There's so many examples of this. And when we look at the state of our world and the dumpster fire that is our ability to connect with people, tell me that this is just anger. Tell me there's nothing underneath that. that we aren't perceiving injustices, that we aren't seeing unfairness, that we aren't upset at the way that other people are living their lives because we're judging them or we're feeling judged by them. That we don't understand how other people could view things differently because we are unwilling to listen to our anger and allow our anger to catapult us toward understanding. We are too focused in the aggression that comes after the initial stimuli of anger that we're not stopping to say, hold on though. Could they also have a truth that makes sense too? Am I leading with enough internal and then external self-awareness to recognize how they might be viewing these things? Could I learn something new and different? Could I not just act impulsively out of my anger and aggression and instead use this for introspection? Can I challenge my own belief systems? Can I hold space for someone else fundamentally viewing the world differently than me without villainizing them or shitting on them or judging them or dehumanizing them? How do we do that? We have to start by de-villainizing it entirely and recognizing what's beneath it. Anger is a protective emotion, and also we know what happens when people are overprotective of us. They cause us harm and we reject them. We pull away from them because it's too much, and what they're doing with it is poor. And it's easier for us to see it in other people and distance from them than it is for us to see it in ourselves and recognize why other people might be distancing from us. I know this episode was long. I could go on and on and on about this topic. I absolutely adore it. I want your challenges. I want you to tell me where you disagree here, and let's talk about it. Not so I can like prove myself right, but so that I can expand my own awareness of this. So I can recognize some bias that I might take into it. So I can recognize that maybe I'm overcorrecting from a version of me that used to not feel a lot of anger to a version that used to like really recognize that I do, but then I would just shove it all in to a version of me that once I became a parent, I became so much more externally expressively aggressive. I have blind spots here, guys, and I want us to be able to talk about it. I would love for you to book a prep call with me. It's a completely free 15-minute phone call where we just kind of either talk about some of these things, we see if I might be a good fit for you, my programming, whatever that might be. You get guidance and advice from me on where to start. You can either work with me, you know, one-to-one, whatever that looks like. If you want to make that investment, you can also join my free program, which is a Steady Friend program, which is basically where you get access to this podcast early. You get webinars and workshops and a bunch of resources and a bunch of free scripts and those types of things. It's completely free. You can do something in between. But let's have a conversation about this. Let's learn where you could focus your energy and what we can actually do with the level of anger that you're experiencing. On our next episode, we are going to go into the neurochemistry of anger, which is so exciting. It'll be a very high-level overview because I have a tendency to go into like my full research brain and start citing things and just make it so much more complicated than it needs to be. So I want this to be a very like simple overview, little bit of a geek out that I'm going to do because I find it fascinating, but more so than anything, just help us understand how these things trigger in our brain and what is an unwillingness and what is an incapability. So please remember, anger is a natural, useful emotion that doesn't have to be feared or villainized or suppressed. Let's feel all of this together. This is your empowerment, one shift at a time. Stay steady, and I'll see you next time.